It has been 2 weeks since the Dorchester Youth Collaborative announced that it was closing for good. But for many who passed through the doors of its Fields Corner Neighborhood Center in the last 40 years, that pain is still raw. Take Steve DeSoto, who grew up going to DYC as a kid, then a teenager. Now he's in his 30s, but he stayed involved with the organization, volunteering as a mentor. And he says that the center was a safe haven when he didn't have anywhere else to go.
Knowing what DYC's done for me is the reason why I'm doing what I'm doing now. You know what I mean? Like, growing up, if we didn't have DYC, we'll probably get into more trouble. You know what I mean? You just go there, you know, you have food, you can play chess, you can do homework, you can do whatever it is you wanted to do there, and they can take you home. It was just safe.
With the Dorchester Youth Collaborative closing, the question remains, what's next? We put that to Emmett Folgert, who co-founded the agency in 1981 and has served as its executive director since then. I asked him why the center was closing now.
It's the pandemic. We struggle to stay open, but I'm sitting in an empty office right now. We can't safely have young people up here the age we work with. We tried. We were not able to keep them distant. And even our truck, that we have a crew truck that does workforce development, fits six people in it, and we can't do that either. And they didn't have the transportation. So it was closed by a vote of the board of directors to close permanently. But we were already closed, you know, in terms of our activities. We had to be. And it's extremely difficult to write reports, you know, to donors about what we did, and it's hard to write what we will do. So there's going to have to be a lot more planning to deal with this pandemic to operate the type of programs that we did before.
And did you expect the vote from the board to shut down permanently?
Did I expect it? I wasn't sure because a lot of programs didn't close permanently, but, you know, that was a decision they had a right to make, and they made it. It's,
Emmett, you talked a minute ago about the things you aren't able to do in your building right now.
Right.
Take us back. What would we have seen young people doing in the building after school before the pandemic?
Okay. Well, first of all, there was a program in the morning from 7 to 9, and we would assemble older young people, 16 to 24. They gathered together, and they're young people who come from families where no one has acquired a skilled trade. So they're like first-generation tradespeople. Very special program, very successful program. So that's what would happen from 7 to 9, and then they would go out to these work sites. At about 5 to 9, we would bring younger people into the building, and it was an after-school program. So we contacted teachers and said, who needs a little bit more? A little bit more attention, especially middle school type kids. And they would tell us, and we did basically a 50-50 thing. So there'd be like 15 of them, and there'd be 15 just walk in from the neighborhood. So we'd have a nice balanced cohort of young people, very diverse. And we'd make sure they already went to after school programs. We'd help get any obstacles out of the way that could keep them from going there. But then we would gather these kids together from 5 and keep them all the way to 9 and feed them and text their teachers and their families and the after-school programs to solve any problems that might occur during the day. We called it focus and finish, you know, just focus and finish your day. And a lot of counseling was going on, you know, especially, you know, with the pandemic. We're still actually on our own. We're doing some counseling over the phone and through FaceTime on that. So there's a lot of psychological support, emotional support that we're quite famous for.
What are some of the challenges that the young people who would come between 5 and 9 or come to the workforce development in the morning might have been facing in their lives that you supported them with?
Sure. Well, first of all, you got to realize where we recruit from. We use the police maps. We use the CompStat maps. You know Dorchester, you used to work there. So there's certain corners, like, you know, Geneva and Charles. Everybody knows the certain corners in our target area that are the highest crime areas in the city by far. So just by fact of living there, you're going to be subject to intimidation and bullying and gang recruitment, these type of things. You're going to see violence. you're going to be traumatized, quite frankly. There's 100% certainty of that. So you got to be ready for them. When they walk in the door, you've got to be ready for what their day was like before they got there.
Emmett, reflecting on all these years, was there a hardest day for you, a hardest moment in these last 40 years?
One of the hardest things was I was going through cancer myself, a serious cancer, mm-hmm. which I made it through, and I'm perfectly fine. I could write my own medical reports. Yeah. But at the same time, there was a 16-year-old boy who was diagnosed with cancer. We're such a small agency. I had to tell the kids that I was going through cancer because I had to keep working. We didn't have enough staff, and I know they would see through chemo. And so I was very honest with them. And then he and I bonded because we were getting treatments literally across the street from each other. He was at Children's Hospital, and I was at Beth Israel. And I would visit him, and he would visit me. And that was a very powerful experience. And he didn't make it. Damone didn't make it. But he was such a hero in the way he handled all of this. And he was supportive to me, and the whole agency was supportive to him. But that was probably one of the darkest moments, one of the saddest moments, when we lost Damone. We dedicated a room to Damone and kept the chair that he sat in, and we had some wonderful volunteers from the Cheesecake Factory that made a uniform for him and set up a stanchion. That's very, very wonderful. The kids were incredible, too. The kids would pour into that hospital, and Children's Hospital was so good with us. He would have at least 10 visitors a day, every day. You know, we did a fund, and we raised money for a headstone just to make sure he had a good headstone.
I'm just taking that in. I want to read you a quote from Diamani Nova, who is a 14-year-old freshman at the Muriel S. Snowden International School at Copley. Diamani told the Boston Globe, talked to the Globe after the news of you guys closing. And Diamani said, quote, DYC was also a safe haven. The staff members were always looking out for us. They could tell when something's bothering us and try their best to get us to talk, even if we didn't want to. It's like a big family, end quote. What happens to kids like Diamani now without their DYC family?
That's a very good question. I'm not going to put a happy face on the closing of any youth agency in this one. It's sad, and it's tough on these kids. We have done our best to get them to go to agencies that are still open. We are still in some contact with them for now. But there's a gap, you know. There's a gap of services with the closing of DYC, and hopefully that will be filled in the future.
Emmett, we had Lindia Downey on from Pine Street Inn, and I asked her, you know, what is invisible to people who are not working with people who are homeless? What is invisible to those who don't work with the youth who come through Dorchester Youth Collaborative? What do we need to understand about these kids and this work?
Well, first of all, they're not a monolith. Every one of these kids is an individual. There are just as many artists. There aren't as many easels. You got to find out what makes these young people tick. I was going to be a Boston Celtic. I was sure I was going to be a Boston Celtic. I loved basketball. I was 6'3". And luckily, there were some people in my life, some mentors that are similar to the DYC staff. They're like, oh, sure, you're going to do that. Let's get a little money together and send you down to a camp that has the city kids from New York City in it. And that helped me get through my day. Now, my hands were too small. I couldn't be a Boston Celtic. But it helped me as a teenager get to the next stages of my life. And all of these kids have something like that. You got to figure out what it is, what really makes them tick, and see them as individuals.
What is the next stage in life for you now?
Well, our team, which is some alumni and the former staff of DYC and me, are meeting with other agencies that still exist to see if we can come up with some type of collaboration to provide those services that were once provided. But also we're going to have to come up with some new ideas. You know, number one, these kids are going to be in tough shape when they are, when they do come back into the building. Many of them are going to be on sleep shifts. They're going to need psychological self-care. They're going to need meditation. Some of these kids are going to come in, and they're just going to fall asleep because they've been up all night. And they're under-socialized. They just haven't had the opportunity to play and to create like they should. I'm seriously thinking we're going to need stand-up comedians to help train our staff to give us 100 ways to make jokes, you know, to politely and kindly correct them, you know, in the nicest voice. But we're going to have to, and we're going to need our own support, you know. We're going to need excellent clinical supervision because aren't we all going through a lot? You know, it's multi-generational. And in all my years of working, I've never seen this before, where the helpers are in their own existential crisis. You know, like, I'm 70, I'm worried about my retirement. And then there's a younger group that's worried about their jobs. And then there's the kids who are worried about their education. We're all being hit at the same time by this pandemic. So we've got to support each other and realize we're under stress, too. It's not just the kids.
Last question for you, Emmett. You know you're famous for the $1 bills, the money you carry in your pocket to give out to kids so they could go buy burgers or a snack. You still have the dollar bills in your pocket? Are you still giving them out?
Yes. I have a deal. I have a deal with an agency that's still in operation that I'm covered under their insurance. That's the first thing I did. I said, here, give me a dollar. Now I work for you. Yeah, just put me down because you know I'm still going to be doing some work out there, and I am.
That was Emmett Folgert, who co-founded the Dorchester Youth Collaborative in 1981 and served as its executive director for nearly 40 years until it announced it is closing for good 2 weeks ago.